Hey, Heat Rockers. Before we get started today, we just want to remind you that it is the Max Fun Drive right now, which is the one time a year that we ask you, our beloved audience, to help support our show.
We're really grateful that because of Max members, we can keep doing this show during this time. And that's why we're doing a drive right now to remind you that you're the reason we can make this content for you to enjoy. Max Fun is audience supported, which means we are free to make the content you enjoy because people like you contribute.
Choose the monthly amount that's most comfortable for you. And we realize that this is challenging financial times for a lot of households. We want to make things as flexible as possible. The majority of people just give $5 to $10 a month. Some are able to upgrade to $20, $35, even $100 or more. It's really about what works for you.
Just go to MaximumFun.org/join and become a member. All right, now on with the show.
Hello, I'm Oliver Wong.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks.
Every episode, we invite guests to join us to talk about a heat rock, you know, an album hot enough to create chunky fire, whatever that is. Today, we are going to be heading back to Atlanta's East Point to revisit the 1998 album by Outkast, Equimini. A debut album is exciting because it introduces something new. Sophomore albums help fuel narratives about growth or reinvention. But when's the last time you got into a deep conversation about perfect third albums? Here are some of the gems that would await that discussion. Midnight Marauders, Homogenic, London Calling, Born to Run, and today's album, Equimini. Southern playlist of Cadillac Music shifted the gravitational center of hip-hop down south. AT Alien saw Big Boi and Andre 3000 taking leaps forward as both MCs and producers. Equimini, for many fans, was the capstone, a nearly 75-minute tour de force of musical, cultural, and lyrical stylings that is arguably, and we will get into this argument, the finest LP of their career, which is saying a lot since I haven't even mentioned Stankonia or Speakerbox / The Love Below yet, and the less said about the Idlewild soundtrack, probably the better. Produced by Outkast, Mr. DJ, and Organized Noize, and named after the two rappers' zodiac signs, Equimini was, to put it in Big Boi's words, quote, two different visions that were parallel, unquote. On the one side, you had Andre's time traveling, rhyme javelin, balanced by Big Boi's penchant for making street music, quote, strictly for the caddy lovers, unquote. We're going to get into all of this and more on today's Heat Rocks episode, bringing our combined and let's see if I can get this down right the first time. Aqualeacorn hive mind.
Hey. Equimini was the album pick of our guest today, Professor Regina Bradley. I've got a soft spot for professors. That's my mama's fault. She is a retired tenured professor that made me love lesson plans and syllabi, required reading, and tests. Teachers' kids are like preachers' kids, minus the moral dilemmas. We love to learn, and we love our environments of origin, so I love school, always remembering specific professors, Rose Lugin, Galen Chappelle, and whoever that teacher was that let the class modernize the Canterbury Tales based on whatever we wanted. My homeboy picked crib sets. At the time, I thought that was as cool as it could get, but it isn't. What's cooler than a class on Outkast called The Rise of the Hip-Hop South with a focus on Stankonia? Not much. She's the co-host of the podcast Bottom of the Map. She digs deep into Southern hip-hop. She's got trap, 808s, funk. She's got all that covered. She's a professor of English and interdisciplinary studies at Kennesaw State University. Her Twitter handle is Zora Neale Thurston. What's cooler than that? Not much. Regina Bradley, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Hey there! How y'all doing?
Good.
I need to take some lessons from your mom. I still don't like syllabus planning or exam prep or none of that stuff.
I am with you 1,000%.
So I have to ask, as we do at the beginning of the show, what was your introduction to Outkast and what was your introduction to Equimini?
So what had happened was, first immediate recognition of Outkast was definitely the Players Ball episode of Martin. I was like, oh, okay.
This party is not over. Let's put our hands together one more time for Outkast.
But check it out, wearing afros and braids, kicking them gangster rock. Now I'm here to tell y'all.
I didn't become outcasted, as I used to say, with folks on outcasted conversations until right before my freshman year of high school in 1998. So I was at band camp. It was trying to make it work, you know, that awkward incoming freshman. Didn't really have no friends, had those strict parents. My grandma was like, yo, don't leave the school to like go to McDonald's. It's like right up the street, but I didn't want to risk it so young.
So, smart.
Yeah, so I was just kind of just sitting there, and all of a sudden I heard folks like start playing. Ba-da-bum-bum-bum, I'm like, oh my.
Morgan, I'm assuming that by this point in time, by 98, you had already come back to L.A. from Atlanta. But had you been following Outkast throughout this? And what were your impressions of Aquemini when you first heard it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was at Clark when Southern Playlist came out. My homegirl was cool with Rico. And so we had our copy early. We just thought we were so just cool because we had it early. We were like, yo, we've got this on deck. And so I journeyed with them. And in 1998, when this came out, if I'm honest here, I was moving away a little bit from hip hop. I thought I had already sort of gone through the golden years, and I was moving a little bit heavier into dance music and all the subgenres of dance. But I was holding out hope, and then I got hit with the 1-2 punch, which was The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill and this one. I want to show, there are going to be random shout outs throughout this episode, but I want to start with shouting out Circuit City because that's where I picked up this album on CD. And I had some sort of Buick that year, and I bumped that thing. And as I like to say, it was love at first listen. From Hold On, Be Strong, I was like, oh, here we go.
I just want to get this part of the discussion out of the way now. And Regina, you mentioned that this was more or less your introduction to Outkast, at least in terms of a full album. Their catalog is, of course, really impressive. And of course, I think a lot of us wish it was longer than it is, but it's still pretty generous.
Yeah.
To you, is Aquemini their best album?
Man, be honest with you, I have a love affair. I cheat between Aquemini and ATLians. So today I'd be like, yeah, Aquemini is their perfect album today. And I think more so is because it was such a perfect blend of their influences and where they wanted to take their music. You know what I'm saying? You know, something like ATLians was, for me, it was like a direct response to being rejected at the Source Awards. It was more fuel than anything. And then with Aquemini, folks already know who they are. Folks, you know, kind of perk their ears up a little bit more. And then you have this 5-mic album in the Source, you know what I'm saying? And if the Source was like, yo, this is 5 mics, which is interesting though, because like Charlie Braxton, who wrote that review, has told me on many occasions, he was like, I had to fight to get them to 5 mics. The Source but like, you know, if you talk to folks like, you know, Kieran Mayo and them and folks who worked like at the Source, you know what I'm saying? They were like, yo, we tried not to give out the 5 mics, but true. You know, I was like, was there a little bias there, regional bias? Yeah, a little bit. I mean, come on.
A little bit.
You know, I think Aquemini was there, I mean, I don't know if I can cuss or whatever, but this was their grown-ass man album for me. I feel like this was their, we're grown, this is what grown men who have been in the game for a minute, who are still evolving as artists, this is what you can do and sound like, and that's what you get with Aquemini. Yeah, yeah.
front to back street. Listen, we on a mission to get right. Working street corner in the midnight. Picture the scene. These fiends with five, $10 dream scheme. Four stack of that, believe that. I'm with whatever like we straw. Stuck serving my cocaine raw. Drop 62 off the brick.
Morgan, I'm going to throw the same question to you.
Cold-blooded, because yeah. I was about to put you in the hot seat. You know I got to have several disclaimers.
All right, go in.
Southern Playlistic is always going to be precious to me.
Yes.
Okay? Because that's how I grew up on them. Ain't no thing crumbling or booty hoo. Come on.
Yeah.
The hits.
Yeah.
And it was like, who are those cats? But I could make an argument for AT Aliens because of Elevators is a jam for me. It's a Stone Cold jam. Millennium. Speaker Box Love Below. A myriad of hits. Spread. Valentine's Day. Come on. But why Aquemini to me is, at least for me, their best album is because for me, I didn't skip anything.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't skip anything when I heard it the first time. And I didn't skip it last night in prep for the chat. And for me, and we can get into this later, there weren't these moments for me where I was like, this is Andre's lane and this is Big Boy's lane. It was more of a synthesis to me. They felt together, not just on tracks, but the way that, you know, the way that the album flowed. So for me, and I know we're going to get, you know, we're going to get some comments, but I just have to say, my disclaimer is that Southern Playlistic, precious. Aquemini, five mics.
I just feel like me and my husband have this system in place. When we talk about music, we're like, if the first album was a classic, they don't even count in the conversation because they already have secured themselves.
Right.
They already have secured. So I'm just like, you know, folks get mad, like, what about Southern Playlistic? And I'm like, it's wonderful. You know what I'm saying? I don't even put it in part of the conversation. because they're not just going to come after you. You gave them a handle and everything. They're coming after me now. Like, what do you mean?
I mean, right, because some people will argue you down about Stankonia, and I'm not going to say Stankonia is not fire, but I feel like I had more jams on this. I love Bombs Over Baghdad. I love Miss Jackson. I love So Fresh and So Clean, but it's just it's hard to describe, but there's just a feeling listening to Aquemini. There's just so many choices sonically, emotionally for me, and it puts it to the top of the list. So,
yeah,
Oliver.
I distinctly remember that when Stankonia came out, there was such a cavalcade of critical love for it. I remember distinctly that it ended up topping the Paz and Jop poll, which was the annual music critics poll that Village Voice would do. And it was not unusual in the grand scheme of things for a hip-hop album to reach number one, but it was the first hip-hop album since, I think, the Arrested Development album from 92 to have topped the Paz and Jop poll. So Stankonia was, at least in the circles I moved in, a really, really big deal critically. And I just remember thinking back, and this would have been, again, circa, what, 2000 or so. I mean, Stankonia is great. I get it.
Yeah.
But I always thought Aquemini was still the better album, though I don't remember, because we're now talking something, you know, 20 years on, I don't remember what my thinking was. I just remembered thinking, no, I still think Aquemini is better than Stankonia, even though it hasn't garnered the same level of praise. But one of the things that I was just thinking about, especially listening to this album and thinking about the group's catalog as a whole, you can make two different arguments, both of which just speak to how incredible Outkast was. Number one is that any one of their first five albums, so starting with Southern Playlistic and going through to Speaker Box Love Below, any one of those could be in the running for one of the best albums of the year, period, right? Number two, you can make the argument that any single one of them could be the best album by the group itself. And I was trying to think of other acts, not just hip hop, just any other musical acts in which the first five albums fulfill both criteria. They could have been album of the year, and they could have been the best album that the group put out. And I'm coming up blank. I mean, no one that I can think of off the top is that consistent. You know, in hip hop, Tribe, De La, like they have like three albums, maybe four. They don't have five that are just flat out classics. And I feel like Outkast, again, if we kind of leave Idlewild off to the side, they've never dropped anything flat. It's like the first four seasons of the Wire, like four of the best seasons of television ever, and you just treat the fifth one like it never existed. That's how I treat Idlewild in this case. But my point here, though, is I think that's incredible, that level of consistency that Outkast brought across, what, like over a 10-year span is remarkable.
The only thing I would add to that, and I totally support your point about it's hard to find, but for me, as a Prince fan, I like his first five.
Okay, Prince is good.
I like his first five.
Sure, that's hard to kind of argue against, except that I think a lot of people don't really fuck with his first album. Like, Prince's first album is sort of like, oh, that's cool, he kind of gave him the game, but then it's really not until Dirty Mind, I feel, that people really started to pay attention to him.
Sure, but if you go Dirty Mind, Controversy, Purple Rain, Sign of the Times, 1999, it's unmatched for me. That's hit after hit.
Those are some good albums.
But it's Prince, you know, he only had 30 something albums. So, but that would be the only contender. But yeah. I agree with your point 100%.
I want to quickly add something, and I would love to hear Regina's thoughts on this, because we touched a little bit on, when we talked about Southern Playalistic with DJ Rashida on that episode, we discussed a little bit how Outkast on that album introduced people outside of the South, and really outside of Georgia and Atlanta, I suppose, to a very particular kind of regional vernacular and dialect that previously you just had not heard much from, I think, a lot of nationally popular rap acts. And I was thinking about how I think the early wave of big rap hits out of the South didn't necessarily sound like they were out of the South. They were kind of location agnostic in a certain way, sonically, vernacularly. But with Big Boi and Andre 3000, I mean, they leaned so hard into sounding like where they were from, and that where they were from someplace distinct. And Regina, I know you have described yourself in one of your internet handles as the Red Clay Scholar. So I know that a sense of place is important to you. So how does Outkast represent their locality through just the way they speak or rhyme?
Okay, dissertation defense. No, I love it. I'm from Albany, Georgia, which is at the southwest corner of the state. Like, I went to Albany State, so we played Clark all the time. so, you know, HBCU stand up, I love it.
Yes.
But I think when I listened, what's always fascinating to me is to get people to say lyrics from Outkast from different parts of the state and different parts of the South, because the emphasis on where you put the oomph on is different. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's important because, one, you know, kind of like Morgan, what you were saying earlier, that Atlanta isn't like a monolithic Atlanta. Like, there's no uniform Atlanta. I feel like they, putting Outkast in conversation with other folks from the dungeon, like Goody Ma, for example, gives you that vernacular that they're in conversation with each other. They're similar, but they're not the same. And I think that's what makes Outkast so alluring, because not only is Atlanta, all of Atlanta, not the same, like even in Georgia, Atlanta is totally different than where I'm from in Southwest Georgia. You know what I'm saying? So being able to use language and inflection and all of these things to kind of speak to the complexity of the places that they're from is something that Outkast forced the readers to recognize in ways that other artists pick up a little later, you know what I mean? Or even if you're thinking about a lot of the artists that come out now, that need to affirm a distinctive regional identity isn't the same. And I'm wondering, it's just something I just think about too, is like, you know, they also created language, you know what I mean? Like, they would create these words or create these new meanings. You're just like, yeah, I think I'm gonna borrow that. Like, you would listen to it. Like, you would hear it like on the album, and you would, you know, you would try it out at school the next day, or try it, and they'd be like, where'd you get that from? You'd be like, either you knew you were listening to Outkast, or you were like, let me fake it and continue to try to use it. You know what I mean? So, I mean, like, even something like a stank you, smelly much, nobody was saying that shit until.
Right. Or cut. Or cut. I hadn't heard cut, you know, uses they were using cut until Outkast. I was like, yo, that's different. But a lot of things I got introduced to in terms of Southern ways of life, and my parents are Southerners, but Atlanta was different. And one of my introductions, my mother's from Waco, Texas, my dad's from Tennessee. They both went to HBCUs. But Southern Atlanta was a different introduction. Like, I had never experienced the Waffle House until I got there. And I'd never experienced it, and it was a revelation. But I'm bringing it up because when I think of Outkast and their dialogue, their dialect, and those inflections, it reminds me of my experience, my first experience at the Waffle House, where I went in there. I'm from LA. I'm thinking I'm getting my regular two-egg breakfast. You got sides. She says grits are hash browns. And I say hash browns, right? And she says, well, how do you want them? And I'm like, well, you know, crispy. You know what I'm saying? I don't know, you know? And she looks at me like, you fool, right? And so she just points to the marquee. And I'm like, yo, wait. And so when I think about Outkast, I think about the ways that you can get your hash browns at the Waffle House. And let me read off some of these categories so you know what I'm talking about.
Oh.
Smothered.
Yep.
Covered.
Yep.
Chunked, diced, peppered, capped, topped, and country. That's the sound of Outkast to me. All those. Ain't changed, man. You might call us country, but we's only southern. And I don't give a fuck, people won't spot this fucking other. And it don't stop, and it don't quit. Like that,
like that, like this. And it don't stop, and it don't quit. To get back to some of the specifics on the album, and of course, we're going to spend a lot of time, especially in the second half, talking about specific songs, but I could not pass up an opportunity to get into the fact that this album has a lot of skits. Morgan is our resident skitologist, a big proponent, wants to bring skits back into music making. So how do the skits, for both of you, how do the skits on this album measure up within the pantheon of hip-hop skits?
Professor, you first.
Even just within the Outkast joint, this, man, my favorite skits are still on Stankonia. Like, Kim and Cookie is classic.
Favorites. Favorites, hands down.
Yo, like, it wasn't no thing to be walking down the hall and then, you know, you randomly hear somebody be like, ring, ring. And then somebody else be like, say hello, Cookie.
Right. Interludes. Skits, yeah, and interludes.
I just feel like, y'all, oh, okay. So okay, in the pantheon of skits, Outkast is unmatched. Like, that's just the humor in it. Like, the humor reminds me of, like, when I will be in school or just be posted up, you know, in the mall or whatever, and you see like this group of dudes just chilling and like talking to shit. And it's just, that's exactly what it sounds like joking on each other. I'm just like, oh, this sounds so similar. But I think on the Aquemini album, like, my favorite skit is actually the opening one after Return of the G. When he goes to the record store and he's like,
Yes.
Hey, what else you got, buddy? I got that new Goody Mob.
Man, we got that.
That's what they be saying, Sky High.
Right.
I tell you what you ain't got, though. $16.99, I give you that new Outkast. I ain't came out yet. It's supposed to come out next week.
Oh, you got that cat? Man,
Give me 15.
You want to get that cat? I thought it was your boy. I thought it was your foe.
Man, first there was some pimps, man. Then there was some aliens or some genies.
Chill out, man. We don't care that.
Then they be talking about that Black Righteous space, man. Whatever, man. Fuck them. I ain't fucking with them no more, man.
They knew what folks were thinking about them. You presented some aliens in the other album. Y'all was some pimps on the first album. But I think being able to subvert like that criticism of, you gave us this one idea about what Southern means, and now here you go changing it again, just speaks to the genius that is, you know, the cast and just how funny these cats are. Like, that's what I want to know. Do y'all just post up in the studio and like, okay, we're going to throw a skit about, go, getting some weed, go, what you got?
Right. Right. I mean, everything is so funny on here. And I think if I had to defend a dissertation on skits and interludes, I would say that a successful skit has to include some reference or experience with phones. And you have that all throughout. If you're not going to do a whole voicemail message, you got to be on the phone. And that's the hallmark of the skits on this album. People calling, you got the heartbreak for me is Nathaniel. And that whole rap on the phone.
They got a nigga on some sir, yes sir. Left, right, left. Throw me in a hole, lift my ass out of step. They treat you like a motherfucking slave. Dope fiends find Jesus, sweaty save. Niggas better get their game tight. Cause these crackers trying to take a nigga light and they right. I'm surrounded by fake ass crooks.
I agree with you, Regina, that Stankonia's got it down. Cause you got skits and interludes. But this was great. And that they came at different places in the album, beginning, middle, and end. So sometimes in a song, it would just break out into something. You'd be like, yo, like the bit with Raekwon, which I love. The whole Shaolin and ATL coming together, which I wasn't expecting the first time I heard it, but it's one of my favorites on here.
I just still feel like Big Boy's throwing shade on that skit. Like, I mean, like
you gotta step up.
Yeah, like low key, like, you know, you have Raekwon in all his New York glory, you know what I'm saying? And then like Big Boy just keeps repeating like word. I'm just like dying. I'm like, do you not see this man is okay.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, worse. Niggas don't even know, son. Yo, we gonna play some funky shit for y'all.
That's right.
Straight up. Pay up, nigga.
From East Point to Shaolin. Y'all better know that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
If I could just add this little anecdote, and I want to give credit where it's due. Rodney Carmichael wrote a great 20th anniversary making of article for Creative Loafing about this album. So I learned all these great little factoids. So because Raekwon being on this album, I mean, him being on like the Mobb Deep album, sure, right? That makes a lot of sense. But like, how did he end up on an Outkast album? And as I read in Rodney's piece, it's because Raekwon owned a spot down in Atlanta. And I guess had maybe known Big Boy previous, but when they came down to do this session, they met at the Lenox Square Mall, which is, I think, where Big Boy and Andre 3000 first met, and made the decision to kind of collaborate. And Raekwon had invited Big Boy into the studio booth as he recorded his verse for Skew It on the Barbie, which was not something that Big Boy had been used to. He usually when someone's taping in the studio, the recording booth, you're not also in it because you're trying to leave it pristine for the person using it. But Ray wanted Big Boy to come in there to basically feed off the energy of being in the booth at the same time. And apparently there was a lot of Hennessy spilled during that particular session. So little tidbits here, little anecdotes to sprinkle
in. Shout out to Hennessy. To Hennessy.
I was also going to say, I meant to mention this earlier, is that really between Atlanta and Staten Island and Queensbridge, I feel like those three cities, and a little bit of Bay Area, a little Vallejo with E40, but they basically remade how we talk. You know, basically, the slanguage that trickled out of those places radically reshaped how we talk. And it is kind of funny to think about Big Boy maybe subtly shading on the kind of New York speak. You know, he should have dropped in some more 5%er language just to really make that point. You know?
Cold-blooded.
We will be back with more of our conversation with scholar and author Regina Bradley about Aquemini after a brief word from some of our sibling Max Fun podcasts. Keep it locked.
It's Max Fun Drive Heat Rock Stars. We've heard from many people who really value our work and the work of other shows on Max Fun, particularly during this time of social distancing. It's been hard on all of us, but having familiar voices to make us laugh, think, interact, and feel normal is extremely important to some folks. If that sounds like you and you're able to join, I encourage you to do so now.
Membership at Max Fun just starts at $5 a month. That gets you all the bonus content, which you will be able to access as long as you're a member. And there's just a ton of content that's waiting for you already right there. Earlier this year, for example, we did a bonus episode where Morgan and I went to the Last Bookstore here in Los Angeles and picked out a few records to talk about right there in the store. I'm not sure they wanted us to be taping there, but we did it. It's there waiting for you. If you choose to join at $10 a month, you get a Max Fun membership card, one of our annual uniquely designed pins, and of course, all that previous bonus content. If you're able to join at $20 a month or more, you get this year's special gift, which is a Max Fun game pack, which features some custom dice as well as a custom deck of playing cards, all with Max Fun centric designs on it. Just visit MaximumFun.org/join to become a member. Again, it's just that simple. Go to MaximumFun.org/join to become a member.
If you want to support a little bit extra but aren't fully able to upgrade right now, you can check out boosting your membership by an amount between levels. It doesn't qualify for the gifts, but it does still directly support the show.
We would really like to thank all of our audience members who are working in healthcare or retail or other essential jobs right now. We are certainly very much thinking about the work that you do and the sacrifice that you're making to help the rest of society out through that work. We're so grateful for it, and we hope that our show is a pleasant diversion for you right now and that we are in some ways supporting the work that you're doing in return.
And if you're a fan of the show but can't become a member right now, that's totally fine. We know times are tough right now, and this show will always be free for everyone. You can still support us by just listening and telling a friend about Heat Rocks.
All right, now back to the show.
Yo, and we are back on Heat Rocks talking Aquemini with scholar and author Regina Bradley.
Regina, the last time I think we spoke at length, you had been thinking or were planning on writing, if I have this right, a series of short stories inspired by Outkast songs, which to me seems like a true dedication to the art of storytelling. What is it that you have or had in mind with that, and where are you with it?
So, Mr. Tenure Review, So, it's just an obsession. There's just so dynamic in multiple ways. Like I got to write an academic book about them, which is dope. But I'm a creative writer. I'm a fiction writer. And I just feel like there's just certain lines in Outkast songs. I'm like, this deserves a story. Like if I'm listening to Spodey on the Dope Luscious and he's talking about like, you know, he just out there posted up. He couldn't even get to the door because he was too drunk. I'm like, oh. Well, what happened before that to make him drunk? He couldn't go into the club.
Me? Well, I've never been there. Well, perhaps once, but I was so engulfed in the OE, I never made it to the dope. You speak of hardcore. Why the DJ sweating out all the problems and troubles of the day? Why this fine, bow-legged girl finds all our doughs?
I've always also been interested in the way that they're ideas and viewpoints about women have been represented in their albums. Because it changes, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
From something like, you know, Club Donkey Ass, right? Sort of playlistic, up to, you know, Where Are My Panties on The Love Below. Like, you know,
yeah.
On The Love Below, I'm like, you know, Andre centers black women. I'm not saying that it's a you know, feminist album, but I am saying that he's thinking about where he fits into the world of women, or black women in particular, and not vice versa, which is what you usually expect in hip hop, is that women revolve around men. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I'm still writing. That's the short part of it. I'm still writing. I'm still kind of trying to figure it out, but I think it's really dope that they kind of left these open ends in their songs, so to speak, for folks to kind of pick them up and fill them in.
Right. I mean, personally, I think, you know, there needs to be more justice for both Sasha Thumper and Susie Screw than the sort of amount of agency or lack thereof that's given to them on their storytelling.
Mamacita.
You know, or Mamacita for that matter.
Are we going to talk about Mamacita? Because
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Clearly,
you have the floor.
You have some thoughts, yeah.
I just feel like it's the outlier of the album. I don't know how else to explain it. Like, it's, you know, Martin, you were talking earlier about, like, transitions and flows, and I just feel like, not saying Mamacita is a bad song, it's not, but I'm just kind of like...
It's weird.
It jumps out at you. It's jarring in a way. You know what I mean? If you go from something like West Savannah, which is, like, writing music, you know, kind of just chill, and all of a sudden, you know, you have, like, this predatory lesbian woman after her... Like, it's just... It's too much going on. Like, I just... It's my least favorite song on the album.
Mahogany team, queens up on the rise. Be careful, watch your back. Blackbirds, don't wear disguise. How we coming hard. Camels too slow, sick them kids do anything. Hustlers keep loot the show. Your game is hot, you can never be your winner. Just begun the game, so consider the beginner.
I thought the most interesting part of that, and obviously you already had Raekwon on the album before, so it's not like you don't have New York tri-state representation, but The MC that we're talking about on Mamacita is, I think, Masada is her name. And she's from Jersey, and she so clearly sounds like she's from the tri-state. And this song, I feel like, could have just been on like a Foxy Brown, you know, album at the same in 98 or 99. And so it feels out of place because it's the least outcasty of the songs on here. I don't think it's a bad song. It just feels like it's from a completely different album and just kind of got wedged in, as opposed to like West Savannah, which goes back to your point, Regina, which was a song that was originally recorded. It was supposed to be on Southern Playlistic, but they left it off.
Right.
And then
right.
It comes back two albums later, but it still feels like it fits into the flow of it. Whereas Mamacita is like, what, like, where are we now? You know, how did this come about? So let's flip this around. We've already figured out some of our least favorite songs. Let's talk about the fire tracks, right? What are the songs that still bang to this day? Morgan, I'm going to put you on the hot seat first.
Shoot. Tough Crowd, okay? I'm just going with it. I'm going with it. The Art of Storytelling.
Part one or two?
Part one.
It's like that now. Now Susie Screw had a partner named Sasha. Thumper. I remember her number like the summer. When her and Susie, yeah, they threw a slumber. Party, but you cannot call it that because it was slumber. Well, it was more like spending the night. 3 in the morning, yawning, dancing under street lights. We chilling like a villain and a nigga feeling right in the middle of the ghetto.
It's animated. It's melodic. The hook. Sleepy Brown.
Hook's great. Yeah.
And you know, I'll be about visuals. So the video. Once you see that video, you experience the song a whole different way. I feel like we get to experience Andre being weird. And I love that. The dancing and the purple and the painting is like early special effects. I love it. I could make an argument for a bunch of other songs. I guess the one that's just as close to my heart is Aquemini. I love Aquemini, yeah. Title track. But there's something about the art of storytelling that does it for me. So that's my story and I'm sticking with it.
It's like that now. You better go get the hoe about your bag now. It's about 4 or 5 cats off here, my leg now. We just shoot game in the form of story raps now.
I'm same here. I think it's hard to pick on here because there's such great choices like you, Morgan. I think we might have had a very similar thought process. I mean, Aquemini as the title track is just, it's so hypnotic. It brings you into this world that is mesmerizing. Obviously, you got Rosa Parks was the big single. It was a club banger.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a song for Total, like Puffy's R&B group Total, which it's impossible for me to imagine Total singing over that track. Like, I don't know how anyone besides Outkast could have done it. So I'm glad that didn't work out. But the art of storytelling is really what I think just does it for me consistently.
Yeah.
And it's not only just the individual qualities of the song, which are great, but it's also, and this goes back to something I was talking about in the first half, is how that song really, to me, fits into this continuum of the ways in which hip hop has always had these extraordinary storytellers. So you can go back 10 years from this album to Slick Rick, and then you can go forward 10 plus years and get to Kendrick Lamar and see, sure, that continuum. And so that's another reason why the art of storytelling works. I think sonically, it's one of the best beats on there, even though lyrically, and this kind of spins back to what we were saying a moment ago, I don't necessarily love it lyrically in terms of the content of it. I think the stories are gripping, but you know, any song that ends with, like, you know, a woman dead of an overdose sung by a man always feels like sort of cautionary tale territory, and hip hop has way too many of those. But despite that, it's still a song, and maybe part of it is just the magic of that hook that you were telling about,
yes,
Morgan. That is, it just does it every time. So, Regina, you're batting third on this one. What is your fire track off of this album?
Liberation.
Mm.
Yeah.
Listen. It don't matter what day of the week it is. Liberation is always gonna be my favorite Aquemini track. Followed very, 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 very closely by Aquemini, the actual.
Yeah.
Because Andre was in rare form on that track. He didn't even care no more. But Liberation, I mean, it's gotten me through so many different things. It's just it's like having church without having to go to church. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right.
But it's such a significant part thing to me because, you know, it's gotten me out of a lot of valleys, a lot of dark moments, from, you know, the passing of my grandfather to dissertating. Yeah. But, you know, Liberation just does something for me in ways that the rest of the album was great. But Liberation just really kind of reminds me that, you know, keep going. You know what I'm saying? Like, keep going. Like, I'm trying to get free. Trying to not care what everybody else thinks. Make your own lane. Sticking with it. Going with it.
I'm so tired. Been so long. Struggling. Hopelessly settling for the day. Hey. Ooh, I sacrifice every breath.
Let's get into some favorite moments. And we actually have already touched on this, I think, a couple times now. But for me, has to be the horns. When you first hear the horns on Spotty Oddy Dopalicious, which, I mean, I don't know if there's a better horn melody in all of hip hop. It's so distinctive. It just kind of, like, as I was saying about Aquemini a moment ago, there's just something about the song and the sound of it that just lures you in. And partly, I think, with this song in particular, it's kind of this mesh of, you have these subtle, or maybe not even that subtle, reggae rhythms operating. The horn lines remind me of something like maybe Fela Kuti might have cooked up. You know, shouts out, I think that the horn group was Horns, spelled with a Z, Unlimited, did them. And you know, I've heard those horns played by marching bands. I've heard them, you know, sampled by other artists. It is just one of the most signature things Outkast have ever done sonically. And every time I hear it, it just gives me those magical chills.
Going to marinate on that for a minute.
How about you, Morgan?
Liberation. Mm-hmm. And it's liberation about the 3:15 mark where you hear Joy and Myrna Peaches start to sing that, ooh. You know what, Christian? I have to hear a little bit of that.
It's like call and response. It's like, you know, it's like that part of the church service where it was like, you know, will there be one? That's what I think about. Will there be one? And you're just kind of like, you know, especially like the shake that, I'm like, just the chant. It sounds like a short prayer. Shake that low. Like, who are you? You know what I'm saying?
Regina, I want to know what one of your favorite moments are. Before we get there, I just had to share this tidbit. This is also from that Rodney Carmichael making of article that came out about this album. And it's about Erykah Badu. And this quote comes from Kawan Prather, who was the group's A&R.
KP!
Quote, Dre's baby mama was Erykah Badu. I mean, damn, why wouldn't you put your baby mama on the record if she's Erykah Badu? It's not like he came to the studio and said, quote, I want to put my girl on the song, unquote, and this bitch work at Varsity. She's Erykah Badu. Okay, do it. Which, enough said, like, yes, if you are in a relationship with Erykah Badu and you are making an album, you put Badu on that shit. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
But I'm sorry, go ahead, Morgan.
I was just going to say shout out to Varsity. Because I think he's talking about Varsity Junior, and I love Varsity Junior. I told you there's going to be random shout outs, so let's just take a moment for Varsity Junior.
As someone who's never lived in Atlanta, what is Varsity Junior?
It's like a hot dog to eat, but
yep. But they support the Braves, so people go there to watch games and stuff. So it's an all encompassing experience. I'm not going to brag on the food, but the experience was really good for me. It's not the Waffle House.
Oh, so no, man. They onion rings still slap. That's about it, though. I don't really. They onion rings always be hidden.
Yeah, the burgers, though, not so much. Right?
I don't.
But I like Varsity Jr.
So, Regina, do you have a favorite moment on this album?
I have a couple of favorite moments on the album.
Yeah.
One of them is like the end of the album.
Yeah.
Not even the skit at the end, the part where it sounds like the track itself is dying. I'm just like, oh, this is so gangster.
Closed mind and folks, you know what I'm saying? It's like we got a demo tape and nobody want to hear, but it's like that the South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
I am an Aquarius, Gemini rising, so I already know that's drama. But I wanted to read a quote about Aquarius-Gemini friendships. And it says that the intellectual connection between the Gemini and the Aquarius friend is strong because the latter has vision and attracts the former, who always loves to tackle a new and progressive idea, not to mention they're both very independent. However, these two may fight because the Aquarius is annoyed by the Gemini's slow progression with any project, while the latter may think the first is too stubborn. I remember around Aquemini after it came out, there were whisperings about and rumors about Andre going solo, right? Going in a different direction. But that was before we got to Stankonia. We still have Stankonia and Speakerbox Love below. So my question to you is, might we have missed something? Was there any truth to those rumors? Or was it just hearsay?
I think it was just hearsay. And this is just, you know, maybe this is the super fan coming out in me, though. But I also think Aquemini was a testament that should that have happened, they could have done that, done the solo tip thing, like because they were just that strong in their craft. You know what I'm saying? And I think
sure.
The other thing that's interesting about Andre, too, and this is just it's kind of why I stopped having these conversations about, you know, Outkast with people, because they like to separate the two. But you know what I'm saying? I'm like, you wouldn't have Andre 3000 without Big Boy.
Right.
because right. Big Boy kept you grounded in such a way that he kept not only the brand of Outkast on point, but also he became like, he kept that signature sound that we expected from the cast in ways that, you know, Andre didn't have to abide by those rules. One, because I like what you said, like Gemini folk just, you don't know which twin you're going to get. I'm not even knocking that. I'm just, but it's like, you know, it depends, because my daughter is a Gemini. She's a true Gemini, and it depends on, you know, which twin right. I'm going to see that day. But it's like,
right.
I feel like that was also an opportunity for Andre to show you there are multiple sides to him in ways that Big Boy didn't have that luxury at the time. So it's like, you know, folks talk about Speaker Box and Love Below. They say like, oh, I was listening to Love Below. That was my jam, you know, woo, woo. And I'm just like, okay, but the Love Below crawled, you know, so Big Boy crawled so that Dre could fly. And then you don't sure. get a Love Below sound from Big Boy until Dangerous Lies and Vicious Rumors, where it's a lot more emotional, it's a lot more experimental. Like, you hear those overlaps between Love Below and whatever. But I honestly just feel like the in ways that Big Boy was already comfortable in his skin as a rapper, Andre didn't arrive until Aquemini.
Right.
And when he arrived, that's when folks were like, oh, let me find out.
For sure. Well, you know, we sat down with King, and I think King picked Speaker Box, The Love Below. That was the album that they wanted to talk about. And in prep for that chat, I had to go back because Confession is Good for the Soul. I spent a lot more time on The Love Below than I did on Speaker yeah. Box. But when I went back, I realized I had missed so many of the jewels that are on the Speaker Box side. I went with what I was comfortable with at the time. And when I went back, I discovered all these things that I was missing. I do think that there's a part of Big Boy that is so, so, so Southern and so consistently Southern.
Mm-hmm.
And it's present on all the albums. Not to say that he hasn't evolved. I'm just saying there's something that's so consistent about his flow and so consistent about his persona that he carries. And that was a comfort to me on Speaker Box Love Below, even as I had to go back and revisit it because I was so into the Andre.
Oh yeah,
Andre Three Stacks of Love Below. Just to be honest about that.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot. You know, I remember that album because it was Albany State Centennial Homecoming. So that's all you heard that whole week was nothing but Love Below and Speaker Box. That's all that folks were playing. You know, and I was just like, I was one of the folks who was knocking Speaker Box. So I was just like, you know, like
Confession. Oh,
okay. Yeah, you know, I wasn't really feeling Love Below like that at first. you know, my was somewhere different, but I just feel like we need to give credit where credit is due, is that you wouldn't have yeah. an Andre 3000 without the consistency, like you were saying, of a Big Boy. And the consistency yep. doesn't mean that he doesn't evolve, because I mean, like, Big Boy tells a story like nobody else, you know what yeah, I mean, with right. the humor and the punchlines and, you know, all those things. But I think the reason that we like to think that Andre is so much more deep, is especially if you listen to the Aquemini album, is that he gives you these moments of vulnerability and these moments of reflection, like this introspective, you know, inner work, emotional work, you know what I mean? That we're just like, oh, yeah. I can relate to that. And Big Boy is giving you storytelling, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not necessarily just vulnerable storytelling, which is what Andre is giving you, but,
yeah.
you know, that's what we kind of expect. But yeah, I just feel like, you know, Andre, that Aquemini album is when he arrives. Like, it's, that is his, I mean, you know, he arrives. He's almost flawless on that whole thing. It's ridiculous.
Of course, you know, I feel like the bearer of bad news. Don't want to be it, but it's needed. So what have you? Now question, is every nigga with dreads for the cause? Is every nigga with goals for the fall? No, so don't get caught up in appearance. It's Outkast, Aquemini, another black experience.
Regina, if you had to describe this album in three words, what three words would you choose?
Mm. Woo! Oliver, I don't like you.
Damn.
You know you my guy. I'm just I kid. You know you all the things. Three words. Ooh, Jesus.
That's two. But I love those two.
I mean, I only got one word, which is unfuckwittable. I don't know if that works.
Just put enough dashes there. I will accept that. It's, you know.
Yep, there you go. Unfuckwittable.
That's it. That's it.
Before we bounce out of here, we always want to leave our audience with something else to listen to, another hype album to step to. So we have some recommendations. I will go first, which is, if you liked listening to Aquem and I, then I recommend that you check out De La Soul's Balloon Mind State, which I think is number one. It's another one of the great hip-hop third albums, first of all. And number two, it's one similar to Outkast on this album, where you feel like the group has really reached a kind of creative peak. Even if other albums were more commercially successful, I think Balloon Mind State and Aquem and I capture something about the sheer creative genius that both groups were able to capture within an album. So that'd be my recommendation.
I shed light and not skin. I ain't from Europe. Afro connects at the root of the retina of the third. Mum's the word when you're blind, baby. Blind to the fact. Don't rest in Compton, so I don't own the gap. But respect is clear crystal, because Millie got a pistol.
Morgan, how about you?
I go to 1995 with Face Records, and I'd go to Goody Mob and Soul Food. I think you get all that dialect. I think you got, to quote Outkast, talk about righteous black spaces. You got the whole family. You got vocals. And it stays consistent to what I think the sound, you know, of Atlanta is. And that's just one of my favorite. It's a personal favorite of mine, so I'd say go to Goody Mob and start with Cell Therapy. I mean, you can go in order if that's your thing. If you're not into going in order, start with Cell Therapy and keep going.
They claim that this community is so drug-free, but it don't look that way to me, because I can see the young bloods hanging out at the store. 24-7 drunk is looking for a hit of the blow. It's powerful. Oh, you know what else they trying to do? Make a curfew, especially for me.
Regina, how about you? What next listen should our audience members invest in?
honestly, well, I got like two suggestions. Okay, so if you enjoy Aquem and I and you like the Dungeon Family, you need to listen to the Even in Darkness album that has Trans DF Express. It's still great.
Hippie to the hop like a digital frog. Throw me the cat and I'll throw you the dog. Simple as a dimple, ain't it? A hole in your cheek. Let's hit the town. So
the other one is, I know you were talking about Earth Gang earlier, but I heard a lot of influences by Dungeon Family and Outkast on Mirrorland.
Yeah.
So if you want to hear something a little bit more contemporary, you can that's one I would definitely check out.
Baby, I'm praising. I'm crazy. Come on over, honey. Give me some sugar. Come on over, sugar. Give me some honey. Put it right on my tongue and I'll get back to the money.
I've been hustling. I don't get no rest.
I don't get no rest.
Once in a blue moon.
Well, that will do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Regina Bradley. Check out her book, Boondock Collage, Stories from the Hip Hop South. Regina, what are you working on right now?
So I just finished the Outkast book, Chronicles of Stankonia, The Rise of the Hip Hop South. So that drops early spring 21. And also the Outkast reader that I edited is also coming out next spring. So I'll Outkast everything in the next 6 to 9 months. But I am still working on that Outkast influence fiction book. So that's what I'm working on now. Yeah.
And where can people track you down online?
You can always find me on the Twitters at Red Clay Scholar. It's award season and I'm also one of those University System of Georgia professors. So we're trying to figure out what to do about COVID. So I've been ranting a lot. Just be warned. I've been ranting a lot.
I hear you.
On the Twitter. But yeah, that's how you can catch me.
Before we head out of here, we just want to thank you so much for making this show possible. We are able to create content independent of outside influence because our audience, people like you, have chosen to support it. And we can't thank you enough.
If you have not yet had a chance to join as a member, you can do so at MaximumFun.org/join. That is MaximumFun.org/join. You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
audience supported.